KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
East Oakland.
Emeryville.
Alameda.
Temescal.
Glenview.
Coming up, Oaklanders rally around presidential candidate Kamala Harris.
It is, to me, it's a sense of pride to have her come home to kick off her campaign, so I'm very happy and proud of her.
Then a team of dogs helps people in paradise find loved ones lost before the campfire.
When people say you've just lost stuff, that's not true. She's not just stuff.
Recovering cremated remains. And from the uncuffed team at Solano State Prison.
Did you have any black friends growing up or friends of color?
No. Honestly, no.
An unlikely friendship between a black man and a skinhead coming up on Cross Currents.
Let's do this together. Let's claim our future for ourselves, for our children, and for our country. I'll see you in Oakland.
Well, 20,000 people saw her in Oakland. They answered Kamala Harris's call and poured into downtown Oakland on Sunday to witness history.
I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
So why in Oakland? Well, she was born there and spent some of her childhood there. Back in the 90s, she served as Alameda County's deputy district attorney, and now she wants to unseat Donald Trump. KLW's Janae Darden was in the thick of the rally scene, and she's here to talk about what she saw, what she heard, and why Harris launched her campaign in Oakland. Hey, Janae.
Hello, Hannah.
Okay, so you went to the rally. What did you first notice there?
The lines.
Uh-huh.
There were thousands of people in line for several blocks at each entrance. Mm-hmm. And the rally was supposed to start at noon, started late. And I met people who waited hours to get into the Frank Ogawa Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
Some didn't make it.
Hours?
Hours. Yeah, some didn't make it. Security was tight. There were helicopters and police everywhere. There was even like a dog at the media check-in.
Like the airport?
Yeah, worse than airport. 20,000 people, you know, at the airport. There was a dog, the bomb sniffer dog at media check-in. So her security team was serious.
Right. Well, aside from it being her birthplace, why do you think she picked Oakland to do this?
I was surprised she chose Oakland because even though she was born in Oakland, she's well known for being the former DA in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But Oakland's popularity outside of California has boomed, and there's articles about Oakland as a travel destination.
Mm-hmm.
And Oakland has gone Hollywood with Black Panther and Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah.
Of course, there's also our social justice legacy in Oakland, like the Black Panther Party and Occupy movement.
Right.
So maybe having it in Oakland was a way of her reaching liberals who say the Democrats aren't progressive enough.
Mm-hmm. So was there anything in particular that gave this rally an Oakland feel? What was it?
It was a diverse crowd along racial and gender lines, which is definitely reflective of not just Oakland, you know, but the Greater Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And her slogan is not Kamala Harris for president,
mm-hmm.
but her slogan is Kamala Harris for the people.
For the people.
For the people.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then there was the music.
I just want to be myself.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
sweat, don't be yourself. Follow me, follow me, follow me, girl, be yourself. That's why I be myself.
I noticed that she was trying to send a message out with her music choices.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the songs were very pro-woman, a lot of hip-hop. She walked onto stage to Mary J. Blige's song, Work That.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about women being themselves and how some people don't support that. Then she left to My Shot from Hamilton, the Roots version.
Mm-hmm.
I shot not throwing away my shot. I said I'm not throwing away my shot.
They'll say, it's not your time. They'll say, wait your turn. They'll say, the odds are long. They'll say, it can't be done. But America's story has always been written by people who can see what can be, unburdened by what has been. That is our story.
So did she get into any detailed policy talk?
Not really. Some people told me they wish she had mentioned details about policies that she'd want to implement, but she was specific about a tax cut.
Mm-hmm. We will deliver the largest working and middle class tax cut in a generation. To $500 a month. We'll pay for it by reversing this administration's giveaways to the top big corporations and the top 1%.
So, any connection to the Me Too movement?
Me Too supporters and Women's March supporters were there in full force. They told me they appreciated that she mentioned sexism and sexual assault. And there were many Black women in attendance, including her sorority sisters of Alpha Kappa Alpha. Mm-hmm. If you saw a Black woman in pink and green, chances are those were her sorority sisters. They're a very influential organization. In mm-hmm. fact, Coretta Scott King was a member. Uh-huh. So I talked with one of Senator Harris's sorority sisters, April Madison Ramsey, who's from their Oakland alumni chapter.
I think first and foremost, Black women are the most frequent voters in terms of demographics to begin with. So you add to that a sisterhood of service and people who are committed, I agree. This will be what helps her move forward.
All right, the sorority sisters are there for her.
Yeah, and I not only noticed her sorority sisters, but members of other Black fraternities and sororities were there wearing letters, including my Sigma Gamma Rho sorority. Yep. Shout out to my sorors. Hey.
Okay, so are there any opposers or people not so in love with Senator Harris?
Of course, this is America, so someone heckled her early on when she began going over her legal career history. There is concern from liberal voters about her not being progressive enough and locking up people of color in the past. I spoke with Opie Alfred, and he is a Bernie Sanders supporter.
She locked up many minorities in jail due to marijuana charges, and as well, she's not for... She went to Wall Street to raise money for her campaign. She's pretending to be progressive, but she's not really about the actual issues like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is actually for Medicare for All, $15 minimum wage, Green New Deal.
Now, what happens if she does, if she clinches the Democratic nomination and she does become, she faces off against Trump, will you vote for her?
So, she becomes a Democratic nominee, I'm actively gonna campaign against her. I don't care if Trump becomes president for another 4 years. She's not going to do anything to fix the country.
Do you think she would be worse than him, or better, or neutral?
The same.
Okay. Were there any undecideds in the crowd?
I also met people who were on the fence, and they came there to learn more about Senator Harris. I met a UC Berkeley student from Youngstown, Ohio, whose community went for Trump, and he wanted to see if she could flip his town. Mm-hmm. So he's still on the fence, but he has plenty of time to decide because the Democratic primaries in California and Ohio, they're not until March of 2020.
Right. So her headquarters are in Baltimore. Why is that?
Right, because it's close to Washington where she can still do her senator work, mm-hmm. But she'll have a second office in Oakland. And Hannah, she said in her speech that this will not be an ordinary election. And it's true, there are already three other women who have announced they're running. And there's even signs that Hillary Clinton may enter the race. Mm-hmm. So buckle up, Hannah. It is going to be a long and definitely bumpy ride.
All right, we're with you on that ride. Thanks, Janae.
Thank you.
Janae Darden is KLW's East Oakland reporter. You can email her at janae@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. When the Camp Fire ravaged the city of Paradise back in November, the town was incinerated. Many of the thousands of people who escaped the flames had to abandon precious valuables, and some left behind more than just objects. They left the cremated remains of people they love. Those are called cremains. Yes, that is a word. Months after the fire, survivors are still hoping those cremains are in what's left of their homes, and a team of specially trained dogs is helping to find them. KLW's Holly J. McDeed has that story.
Judy Higgins stands next to her burned-down home in Paradise, casually chatting with a team of archaeologists about her dad's ashes. She's the kind of woman who can laugh in the face of death. She kept her dad's cremains in a plastic box in her closet.
Well, hey, he had a whole family up there. He was with his wife that died previously. Somehow I ended up with her ashes, too.
Lynn Engelbert is here to search for those ashes. She's with the Institute for Canine Forensics. They're a team of volunteer detective dogs, dog handlers, and archaeologists who can find cremains lost during wildfires. Like any good detective, Lynn is searching for clues. She asks how and where the ashes were kept.
It sounds funny, but I tell people next time they stay in someone's guest room, ask who's on the top shelf in the closet.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next, Lynn pulls out her not-so-secret weapon.
This is Miss Piper. She is an 8.5-year-old border collie.
Piper is a small black and white canine trained to sniff out cremains. She's quiet because she's concentrating. So if you're looking for a story featuring excited, yip-yapping dogs, you won't find it here. Piper is a professional. A dog's sense of smell is laser-focused, up to 100,000 times more powerful than any human's. So, with her nose as a guide, Piper heads towards what was once Judy's bedroom closet. After a few minutes, Piper sits down, signaling that she's found the scent of human cremains.
Wow, this is one of the best things yet.
Why does it feel so awesome?
It's my dad.
Judy's dad died of cancer 5 years ago.
I was with him when he died, up until the last day.
She took care of him while he was alive, and when he died, she was responsible for what happened next, everything from planning the funeral to the cremation. She kept his ashes in her home, wanting to feel close to him. Judy was driving a school bus in Paradise when she got a call about a raging wildfire. She parked the bus and ran 4 miles to save her two dogs. She and her husband grabbed the animals and drove off.
Then we knew everything was on fire because everything started exploding around us. And we didn't think we were going to get out. We said our goodbyes to our family, and I called my daughter, and then our phones went dead. So everybody thought we died.
But in the rush to not get killed, Judy didn't have time to grab her dad's ashes. When she went back to Paradise, her house was totally incinerated. All that was left was her collection of pig figurines and an old coffee mug, all still intact. She heard about the Institute for Canine Forensics on Facebook and gave them a call to see if they could help her find her dad. So the archaeologists are here now, digging away. There are some skeptics out there who say neither dogs nor humans can tell the difference between wildfire ash and human ash. But Lynn says human cremains have a distinct texture and color.
It can go anywhere from kind of a gray-white, which is what they normally are, to a creamy color, to a creamy pink color. And we've had some that are turmeric orange.
The Institute for Canine Forensics is based in Woodside in San Mateo County. It launched in the late 90s to train dogs to sniff out old cemeteries and Native American burial sites. The group has since gone on to search for the remains of the Donner Party and Amelia Earhart. Piper and the other pooches are trained with real human teeth and human bones.
And we start them on right away. We start them by, you know, teaching them that human remains, this is what a human bone smells like, and you get a treat when you tell me about that.
Lynn is so committed, she's willing to give her own body for these dogs.
I tell people when I die, I want to be cremated and given to my training group because I want to still go out and play with them.
After the Tubbs fire hit Santa Rosa in 2017, the group began fielding calls from wildfire survivors, desperate to find human cremains they left behind. The search team has been helping wildfire victims recover cremains ever since. When the most destructive wildfire in state history struck Butte County, over 130 people asked the group to find cremains. The group never charges and never says no.
These people have lost their loved ones twice. Once when they first died, and now the thought of these cremains going to a toxic dump is just devastating. Not where they want their loved one.
Here in Paradise, the archaeologists dig and dig. After a couple of hours, though, the team starts to lose hope. They find what could be cremains, but only a small amount. They scoop them up and hand them to Judy in a plastic bag. The archaeologists look defeated, but Judy is smiling.
I feel a little relieved. At least I can, I'll convince myself this is my dad. And the rest of them's not going anywhere.
Judy plans to rebuild a home back in Paradise someday, set up a little memorial for her dad, and plant these cremains in her yard. Luckily, she tells the group, she also has some spare cremains of her dad she kept in an RV. They're inside an old bottle of Jim Beam. She takes it with her when she goes traveling to sprinkle her dad's ashes throughout the country.
And I told him I was going to do that before he died.
What did he say?
He said I was morbid.
With that, the group takes off to their next mission at what was once an old mobile home. When they arrive, other archaeologists and dog handlers with the team are already at work. The group lifts up a collapsed roof. Betty Four and her brother Harry are hoping the team can find their mom's cremains. Betty, a short woman in army cap, holds up a picture of their mom.
Oh,
that's my mom.
Okay.
My mom.
Isn't she a sweetheart?
She is.
You gotta put a face to it, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, we do.
That's what
Lynn brings out the border collie.
Piper, turn. Here, come here.
Piper.
Turn. Piper. She says, no, I smell cremains over there. Sit.
Piper wanders into the ashes. She lays down, signaling that she's found the scent of cremains. One of the archaeologists sees something that catches her eye. The archaeologist digs and finds fragments of bones. Suddenly, she starts to feel a texture that's almost like sand or coffee beans. She goes to the siblings to tell them the news. She's found the cremains.
What?
Betty tears up, turns to Piper, and thanks her.
When people say you've just lost stuff, that's not true. She's not just stuff. She's a real person. She cared for us. She was a good mother.
Yep, the best.
Lynn Engelbert says finding cremains isn't usually a priority in the aftermath of wildfires. But she says wildfire victims need things that can help them heal. And for some, that includes finding cremains. She's pushing to make this detective work part of FEMA's standard response to natural disasters. Piper heads back into her crate for some alone time and to recharge her nose. This dog has a lot of work ahead of her. In Paradise, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
Holly J. McDeed is our justice reporter. You can reach her at justice@klw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we have a story from Uncuffed. It's our series at Solano State Prison in Vacaville. So with the help of our team, the men there sit down, talk to each other, record interviews, and then edit them into these short pieces that we play for you right here on KLW.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
So this story comes from Uncuffed producer Brian Thames, who's incarcerated at Solano.
Gary Midnight Peterson is a skinhead. He'll tell you that himself. But he's also a man who values family and friendships. I sat down to chat with Midnight about some of his lingering supremacist views and what it means to have one black friend in the world. Me.
Since I've met you, you mean you've gone out of our way to like make sure, hey, how's your day? What are you doing today? Are you cool today? You know what I mean? Just checking in kind of things. And you have become one of my sounding boards.
Aren't you a skinhead?
Yeah.
When did you become a skinhead and why?
Back when I was 14 years old, I was brought in by another gentleman.
Okay.
But, I was taught a bunch of different ways. One is to have pride in your own race. Another one is to have pride in your family. Another one is just to be angry at everybody.
I've gotten to know you, you're a really likable person. I like you a lot. I want to know why or how you're able to open up to me the way that you are, considering that you're a skinhead. I'm a black man.
I think a lot of that just has to attribute to when we first met. I came over and just was checking you out when you were, I remember exactly what you're doing. You're playing Scrabble with one of the other guys in the class. And I seen how literate you were. It just, I don't know, me and you just hit it off from ground zero.
And then we got on to other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that a stranger can find you so likable, but your family doesn't seem to like you as much?
Because you've been dealing with me for 48 years. Give it a minute, you'll dislike me too. No, I've burned a lot of bridges in my life. I mean, I burnt them hard.
What's your nickname?
Midnight. I always introduce myself by my nickname or by my name, and I'm a skinhead, whatever. And that kind of breaks the ice. You get to see people's reaction. Either they want to mess with you after that, or they hit the bricks and they're gone.
Did you have any black friends growing up or friends of color?
No. Honestly, no.
Was that a choice or just the circles that you were in? How did that?
That was the circles, my family, and just in Concord, there wasn't that many blacks.
Do you think that I'm different than other blacks in general or in particular?
Everybody's different, but I'm not going to necessarily, you're different from any other black. I mean, if you want to
talk. Then why don't you have more black friends?
Who says that I don't?
Do you?
No.
Are you ever concerned that our friendship could cause problems for you with white people?
I don't care.
That doesn't answer the question.
No.
I like
not,
that.
It's definitely not a concern of mine. I don't care what anybody thinks. If you haven't noticed, I really don't care what people think of what I do. I do cherish that I can come to you at any given time, knock on your cell door and be like, Brian, and you take the time out of your day and be like, what's up? And you just sit there and listen to me. And then you either give me advice or you just let me talk. Yeah, that's something for me to cherish. And I don't even have that with a lot of people on the streets.
You said that you treasure, you know, our friendship. Did I interpret that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. So what? Am I one of the good ones?
Not going to say that either. No, you're just someone that I don't jive with a lot of people. I don't. I don't care to take the time to meet people. I'm cool just doing my own little thing in my cell, drawing and being there the best I can for my kids and my family. Everybody looks at me and they see the skinhead, they see the tattoos, and that's really standoffish to a lot of people. But if you take 2 seconds to like talk to someone, you might see something different.
Maybe, maybe not.
That's Brian Thames. He was interviewing Gary Peterson. Thames is a student in KLW's radio program at Solano State Prison. It's supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed. They're at our website, klw.org/uncuffed. And while you're there, make sure to subscribe to our podcast. Do it. You can listen to every single show whenever you want, wherever you want. And here's some folks who worked on today's show. Lance Gardner, Priya Mahadevan, Truk Nguyen, Jessica Plachik, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers today, James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Spud Buddy from Los Altos. They are performing tomorrow night at Hotel Utah in San Francisco. Check them out. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
What surprised me? I've been living in this pipe dream for way too long. Surprise me, I kinda like this ride.